Turning our attention now to the shipwrecks of southeastern Wisconsin. And why? Because we've got Brendan Baylott with us. He is the author of Fathoms Deep But Not Forgotten, Wisconsin's Lost Ships, Kenosha, Racine, Milwaukee, and Port Washington. And he's been collecting information for 20 years or so. He's been doing this for a long time, born in Madison, and grew up in the upper Michigan's Keweenaw Peninsula. And he developed an interest in scuba diving and maritime history. And with us today to talk about his book and to talk about the shipwrecks, which I'm always amazed at the number of shipwrecks there were in that kind of relatively not a very long stretch of water there. There are an awful lot of shipwrecks, and it's got to be fascinating to be able to go down and see them and to know the history, what went wrong or what happened to those ships. So he's with us today and certainly willing to take your questions as we talk shipwrecks. The number 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@WPR.org. Brendan Baylott, welcome.
Thanks a lot, Larry. Thanks for having me.
I really appreciate having you with us today. So you've been doing this for 20 years.
Yeah, I got started at a pretty early age when I grew up on Lake Superior. We had a number of shipwrecks right off the house, and I used to go out and clean the fishing lures off of them, and I eventually got kind of interested in what ships they might be and learning their story, and I got interested in telling their stories, too.
Well, I tell you, you've done a marvelous job with your book here. You co-founded the Great Lakes Shipwreck Research Foundation.
Yeah, back about 1999, we realized that there were a lot of new shipwrecks being found on Lake Michigan, but the State Historical Society didn't really have the resources to go out and look at each one, and we decided we were going to start to raise money to help them do that. And so we started an annual event called the Ghost Ships Festival in Milwaukee. It now gets about 1,000 people every March who are interested in Great Lakes shipwrecks, and we give grants to help study and educate about our maritime history here in Wisconsin.
Well, I tell you, I'll find out some more about this Ghost Ships Festival, but let's talk about the shipwrecks themselves. It really amazes me the number. What's the reason for a couple of thousand shipwrecks at least we know about, isn't there?
I think in Lake Michigan, we have about 2,500 losses to commercial vessels. The reason there were so many is because back in the 1800s, the Great Lakes were the equivalent of today's freeway system. Schooners were almost as common as semi-trucks. On any given day, you could look out over the lake and see 100 schooners with their masts,
wow,
with their sails flying off of Milwaukee, for example. And just simple odds are, with that many ships, you're going to have accidents. One of the bigger reasons, though, was the lack of weather reporting. Sailors who went out on the lakes usually in November, because they had to get the grain delivered, they had to get the coal in for the winter,
right. Were
sailing right at the time when the worst storms were hitting, and they didn't know if there was a storm coming. And many times they met their doom that way.
And how many, you said 2,500, but I believe in your book you say we've identified about 1,000 of them or thereabouts?
That's about right. In our Wisconsin waters, statewide, we have approximately 1,000 total losses to historic vessels. Of those 1,000, we found remains of approximately 150 of them that we've studied. There are another good number that remain to be found and that are essentially time capsules, archaeological time capsules. Because the water of the Great Lakes is fresh water and we don't have the marine boring worms and a lot of the life that's in the ocean, we find wooden ships that are still intact, almost to the extent that they could be sailed or floated and sailed from 100 and even 200 years ago.
Oh, that's amazing. If you'd like to join in, by the way, with a question or comment for Brendan, I hope you will. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@WPR.org. And I guess there are some pretty famous shipwrecks. Maybe you could talk a little about some of the famous wrecks that occurred between, Kenosha, Port Washington, in that area.
Well, probably the most famous is the Car Ferry Milwaukee. It was
featured
on Deep Sea Detectives on the History Channel. The ship vanished in 1929. Nobody knew where it was. It took 50 lives with it when it went down. It was a train car carrier. It was heading from Milwaukee to Grand Haven in arguably one of the worst storms of the century. I had no idea that they were going to be encountering 30, 40-foot waves. In 1972, the remains of the car ferry were found only 3 miles off of Whitefish Bay in 120 feet of water. They had turned around and tried to make it back to port and came within just a few miles of safety when they sank. Her remains today are a very popular dive site.
Yeah, what does it look like when you... Have you been down there?
I have a number of years ago, and we've recently been doing remote sensing surveys where we print a three-dimensional picture of the wreck as it lies on the bottom, which I've reproduced in the book.
In the book, yeah.
It's a massive site. But like many of our Great Lakes wrecks, it's beginning to deteriorate. Nothing lasts forever, and frankly, the wooden wrecks sometimes last longer than the metal ones.
Is that right?
The metal begins to deteriorate, and before too long, it starts to collapse in, and we're beginning to lose the car ferry Milwaukee, I'm afraid, and so we're trying to study it while its remains are still there, much like we're trying to do with many of our historic shipwrecks.
Are those cars still on the... On the ship?
Well, there are a few train cars on the ship, but probably the a more interesting wreck, which was just recently found, was an automobile carrier called the Senator. It was the largest ship still missing in Lake Michigan waters. And a colleague of mine found it off of Port Washington in 450 feet of water, carrying 422 1929 Nash automobiles.
And they're still there.
They're all still there, laying on the bottom, but... Because they've been in water for so long, I think if you raise them, they turn into powder quite quickly, and they're protected as state-owned historic resources as well. You'd do better to buy a 29 Nash from an automobile show.
Okay. And this whole business about bringing things up, I mean, this can happen anyway. You're not supposed to do this to begin with.
Our state law holds all of our historic resources in trust for the public of Wisconsin. These things are owned by the communities. And so we like to encourage people to leave things on the bottom because they're best preserved there, we feel. A lot of things that have been brought up by divers over the years begin to rot, metal starts to crack, wood begins to decompose. And, you know, usually wives and children get tired of trying to store dad's rusty old junk, and eventually it finds its way to the landfill. And we've learned from hard experience that if it's not going to have the money spent on it to put it in a museum, it's best to leave it on the bottom.
Yeah, and a lot of them have been looted, I know. What are some of the little-known wrecks that have been looted or damaged or and not recognized as valuable?
We have a really astounding schooner from the fur trade era off Manitowoc called the Gallinipper. She was owned by the Dousman family and bought by Michael Dousman, who was a War of 1812 soldier. She was sunk in by a tornado off of Manitowoc.
Oh,
she was hit by a very severe storm in 1851. Her completely intact remains were found in 1994, with her beautiful scroll figurehead and her deck houses still there, and all of the artifacts from 1851 still on board. But it was kept a secret, and it was kept so secret that the few people who knew about it were able to go down and remove her figurehead and her ship's wheel and several other items before the state finally learned of the site and was able to survey it correctly and tell its story to the people of Wisconsin, because it has such a huge role in our history.
Yeah. Tell us about your book, again, how you've got it organized and what it contains.
Well, I broke the book into three sections. I have the first section is where I introduce the topic and teach people about underwater archaeology, maritime history of Wisconsin, and why it's important to Wisconsin. The second part talks about, is essentially an encyclopedia of about 400 ships that were lost in this part of Wisconsin. I tell the story of each ship briefly. I give photos of them if they're available. And I also talk about how they might be found if they're undiscovered or not. And if they are found, I give their location. And in that section, I also talk about all the histories of each port, where I give a fairly rich, detailed history of who founded the port, the early French exploration, the British exploration. And I take you right up through the shipbuilding of that port and all the vessels built there and what happened to them. The last story is what I call Wisconsin shipwreck stories, where I tell some of the more interesting stories in detail.
Brendan Baylott, our guest today, as we talk with him about the shipwrecks of southeastern Wisconsin in his book, Wisconsin Lost Ships. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. You write that shipwreck identification is a little bit kind of a forensic pursuit, isn't it?
It really is. It's almost like solving a crime. With the water lowering on the Great Lakes, we have many old keels and ribs that are washing up on the beaches and being exposed. And we get calls regularly at the Wisconsin Underwater Archaeology Association, our avocational group that helps the state identify sites, to find out what a wreck is when it washes up on somebody's beach. And so we have to measure it. We have to look at how it was built. Was it built with hand tools? Do we see marks where the wood was hand cut? We look at the metal parts. Do they have patent numbers? And we try to match this up with the known historical losses in the area through the use of archival records from the National Archives, from our State Historical Society. And by doing that, we're able to tell the story of the wreck, give it a name and an identity, tell who its crew were, its captain, and what its connections to the community and to the state were.
Let's turn to John in Kenosha. John, thanks for calling. Hello.
Hey, thanks a lot. I have a friend who lives just south of Wind Point in Racine, and it's very shallow right there. And she was telling me that they're out there messing around on boats in the summertime, and they can see, like, the ribs of a wreck that's in, like, 6 feet of water. Do you know what that would be?
I certainly do. That's a wreck that was only recently identified. It's a very large schooner called the H.L. Whitman that was lost in the early 1870s. It's a tentative identification, but we're fairly confident of it. There are about, Wind Point is just a ship graveyard. There have probably been a dozen significant wrecks there. But based upon the length of that keel and the width of the ribs, we think the H.L. Whitman's a pretty good candidate. She was built as a grain carrier in the east and later came to Lake Michigan as a lumber carrying vessel and was lost in that capacity in the early 1870s.
And how big was it?
Generally speaking, I don't have it in front of me, but I believe she was in the neighborhood of about 120 feet in length. I would have to look at the exact specifications. But an average size, a two-masted Great Lakes wooden schooner, really a significant vessel, very common type of vessel for Wisconsin waters.
Excellent. Thanks, John. Appreciate your call very much. Brendan Baylott, our guest today, as we talk with him about Wisconsin's lost ships. Join in at 800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at the shipwrecks of southeastern Wisconsin today with Brendan Baylott of Marshall Recognized Authority on Great Lakes Marine Antiquities, president of the Wisconsin Underwater Archaeology Association, and author of the book Fathoms Deep But Not Forgotten, Wisconsin's Lost Ships. Great to have him with us today, and thank you for listening in. Questions or comments for him about the shipwrecks along southeastern Wisconsin, I hope you'll join us at 800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. Brooks in Sheboygan has a question for you, so let's go there. Hi, Brooks.
Hi. I just had a quick question on shore-based memorials. Up here in Sheboygan, we had the Phoenix tragedy. This ship full of immigrants from Northern Europe, their ship catches fire in the wee hours of the morning, and you know, many, many, many people perished, women, children, et cetera. It's a really dramatic story, but I guess what struck me when I moved up here was that I read about this in a sign, and it piqued my interest, so I started doing a little bit of research, and what I found was really an extraordinary story, just an extraordinary drama. Where, you know, a man is woken up, he sees a glow on the horizon, and, you know, fears that there's danger, that a ship has caught fire. And instead of going back to sleep, you know, he alerts the community, which Sheboygan apparently was a frontier town, ran through the streets, got people involved, and they were able to save a handful of souls. But I guess, you know, most people, I guess, wouldn't do the legwork necessarily. They see a steel or bronze marker with some really dry text, and somehow, you know, all the good things that man can pass on to his fellow man from a tragedy like that are lost. And so I have a stone masonry business in Sheboygan, and we have sculptors and stone masons employed, and we started working together to come up with something. And so we started carving these clogs out of limestone. And we're going to set those. There's a portion of North Point Beach where the bedrock's exposed. We're going to fasten those in there, something very subtle, but inscribe in the bedrock just something that we didn't forget. And, you know, again, there's some beautiful, endearing things that can come from a greater knowledge of what happens in extreme situations like that.
I certainly would agree with that, and I'm sure, Brendan Baylod, you would as well.
Definitely, and that's a wonderful idea, the clogs, I think, particularly with the Phoenix was such a tremendous part of Sheboygan's early history. And we have many other instances like that where we've done shore site memorials and taken them even further. The Lady Elgin, for example, a tremendous disaster off of Winnetka, Illinois, that killed many hundreds of Milwaukee citizens. There's, of course, the plaque, which we felt didn't do it justice. And so we worked with Milwaukee Public Museum to do a distance learning opportunity with many school children all over the country to teach them about the site. And our State Historical Society has what they call the Maritime Trails Program, where they put up some very richly interpretive plaques that show the remains and tell the stories, more than just the big iron plaques, but are very graphically rich. And they're all over our Wisconsin shorelines now.
Well, go ahead, Brooks.
Well, I just want to say I really appreciate it. And, I appreciate what you're doing. And hopefully it does pique people's interest to look at this, because some of these stories can be really, they can remind you that we're not surrounded by strangers and bad people.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said. Thank you very much for calling. And thanks for your work in the Sheboygan area as well. That's great. Thank you, Brooks. Tom in Boscobel, will turn to you next. Hi, Tom.
Hi. How you doing?
Good.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was just wondering if there's any kind of effort being made to document all the wrecks, especially the World War II era aircraft wrecks that, you know, from the when they were doing their carrier base training and stuff off on the lake out of Chicago. And I know they're trying to do it over in Europe in the English Channel because it's such a hazard to the fishing community, and I was just wondering if they're trying to do that here, too, on the lake, because I know a lot of the wrecks are in the shallows and stuff, so yeah. I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks.
All right.
Excellent question. We have a number of efforts that are ongoing to document and tell the stories of our shipwrecks that are in Wisconsin waters. A number of organizations that are active in doing that, particularly the State Historical Society, takes a lead in that, and many avocationalist groups, too, that do also, that you can join and participate in the survey work. But your question about the military aircraft is one that often comes up, and we didn't lose any military vessels per se, but we did lose many military aircraft off of the Wolverine, which was a training vessel for World War II. In Illinois waters, there are approximately 400 historic World War II era aircraft laying on the bottom of Lake Michigan.
Wow.
These aircraft are owned by the Navy, and they have a sole source contract with a company called A&T Recovery out of Chicago, who has mapped all of them and located, I believe, almost all of them, and they recover them. If somebody's willing to pay for the restoration and is interested, you pay the Navy, and A&T Recovery will raise the plane. They don't study them as archaeological sites. They don't release the locations of them, but they are known, and they're owned by the Navy, and they are regularly raised and purchased by collectors.
Very interesting. Debbie in Wisconsin Rapids, I believe, wondered if there are shipwrecks off Algoma. There are lots of those, I believe.
That's correct. Algoma is outside the scope of this book, but this is Volume 1. I have Volume 2 coming out soon, which will cover the area from Sheboygan to Algoma. Algoma is pretty close to the Sturgeon Bay shipping canal, and it did see a tremendous traffic in lumber and iron ore coming out of Escanaba. The Wisconsin Underwater Archaeology Association has what we call our Clay Banks Project, which is surveying the area from Algoma to Clay Banks, looking at the old piers and identifying where they were, because many of the schooners wrecked right off the piers.
Oh.
And we've identified so far several of the piers and a number of keels and ribs from historic schooners right in that Algoma-Clay Banks area. There are also several large, substantial deep wrecks. The Lakeland comes to mind. It's a very historic vessel from the 1920s that sank. It was scuttled for insurance purposes, as research revealed after divers started to visit it. Has a few automobiles on it, and it's a real popular dive site in pretty deep, over 200 feet of water.
Do you have any idea how many people and crew were killed or were injured in these wrecks? You do have quite a bit of information on that in your book.
Yes, I do. Generally speaking, we can tell a lot about what happened in an accident from the news microfilms. They're all preserved on micro going back to the 1820s here in the Great Lakes region, 1830s on Lake Michigan. And the papers at that time followed the maritime business very, very closely. It was a much bigger deal than it is now. And so anytime there was a shipwreck, you can rest assured the local paper would write a fairly detailed and sometimes dramatically embellished article mm-hmm. about it. So we do know the names of the people generally who were lost. We have a lot of information about crew, also captains and owners that come from our archival materials at the National Archives. But we try to tell those stories and not just give names, but we go into the census and find out who these people were, what did they do, and what was their significance to the community here in Wisconsin.
And a lot of this information is right in your book, Wisconsin's Lost Ships.
Definitely. I go through and for every historic loss that I was ever able to find in my 20 years of research, I try to tell the story. I tell it fairly briefly, simply in the interest of space, because there's 400 ships detailed in here.
Yeah.
And I tell you pretty much the basic facts. I give you a primary reference to a news microfilm or where I learned about the wreck from or where you could find more information about it if you really wanted to learn more about it. But mostly I talk about how they could be found because so many of these wrecks are deteriorating due to zebra mussels and quagga mussels that have come in the lakes just in the last 20 years. The gallinipper, which I talked about earlier, lay on the bottom of the lake for 150 years in pristine condition in pitch black darkness. Within the last 10 years, the invasion of quagga mussels has made ambient light penetrate right down to that vessel. It's light down there now in 200 feet of water, and she is just carpeted with thousands of pounds of quagga mussels. If we don't find and document these very historic sites soon, many of them are going to collapse and be destroyed due to this new invasive species. It's cleared up the water column for divers. We can see 100 feet underwater now.
Yeah.
You know, you could see 10 feet underwater there, 500 years ago. The lakes shouldn't be that clear.
Yeah. Dave in Prairie du Sac, let's turn to you now. Hi, Dave.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You kind of partially answered my question in talking about the resources, but I was wondering, my great-grandfather apparently built some schooners from his lumber yard up in Suamico, Wisconsin, back in the 1870s. One of them he named after himself, the M.E. Trimble. I don't know if that's one that ever turned up in any of your research or not, but evidently it sank off Detroit in the St. Clair River in the 1890s. I think by then it was probably a coal scow. But, there's probably a lot of ships built in Wisconsin that sank in places other than Wisconsin waters, and this is one of them, I guess. But I wondered if you'd heard of that particular ship and where I might find some of the, firsthand records of, its ownership and, its travels.
Excellent question. I am familiar with the ship. One of the reasons is that we have many databases that have been assembled of every vessel ever registered on the Great Lakes. Approximately 60,000 vessels have sailed the lakes since registration began in 1810. The M.E. Trimble, in particular, is in my databases because she is a Wisconsin build, and I am familiar with the builder. If you wanted to learn more about the Trimble, one of the things that you could do is get all of her enrollment documents. They can be ordered from the National Archives, or they can also be ordered from the Wisconsin Marine Historical Society on their website. They've got copies of those that they've made, WMHS.org. There's other information. There are photos of her that are in some of the historical collections around the Great Lakes. I would recommend the Milwaukee Public Library or the Wisconsin Maritime Museum in Manitowoc has a wonderful collection that is very rich in material. I would encourage you to get in touch with them as well. And there's other information about her career. We could pretty easily reassemble a complete picture of her career from the historical documents.
That's excellent.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, welcome. Thanks, Dave. Dennis in Seymour. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Thanks for calling.
I've always been fascinated by this subject and wondered about all of the Great Lakes shipwrecks. Are there ever any skeletal remains found in them?
I'm afraid so. And in fact, because it's fresh water, sometimes the remains aren't merely skeletal. Up at Isle Royale National Park on Lake Superior, the wreck of the Kamloops from 1927 contains the body of the engineer still sitting at the controls in the engine room in 200 feet of water. He's wearing a bib overall still and is not skeletal. The body's become saponified is the term that's used. It's a phenomenon that occurs primarily on the Great Lakes because they're fresh water. But we do see some tremendous preservation of human remains. We try to respect those to the extent possible. It's considered among divers on the Great Lakes to be in bad taste to photograph and film human remains. We try not to do so out of respect. Many of these wrecks are grave sites, and we do see skeletal remains, certainly on the older wrecks, and sometimes remains that are not skeletal.
Again, that's fascinating.
Thanks for calling. Appreciate it, Dennis. And let's take another call. Ken in Fox Point, I think it's your turn next. Hi, Ken.
Thank you very much, and good afternoon. I've been waiting for your book to come out. Last I was present with Jerry Geyer while you were talking on the phone. You had not yet published it last fall, so I'm very happy. Question with regard to the Carfair Milwaukee. Was the body of Captain McKay ever found?
That's a tough one. I would have to look back at the records. My recollection is that it probably was. I believe most of the bodies were found. In fact, I seem to recall perhaps seeing a headstone when the History Channel did their documentary.
Yes.
I acquired a scrapbook about that disaster some time ago that was created by the mother of the wheelsman. She had... was very badly affected by her son's death. And for her therapy, she was encouraged to create this beautiful scrapbook of news articles from 1929, 1930. And I acquired it several years ago, and it just has an amazing amount of original information about the captain, the crew, and really the aftermath. It was such a tremendous tragedy for those people and
yes.
for the city of Milwaukee.
In the early articles, I recall seeing a crew of 29, and I think you were saying something like 50 people?
Yes, I believe she had significantly more than 29. It was 1929 that she was lost in, but I believe she had closer to 50 crew on board and was one of the worst losses of life in a shipwreck on Lake Michigan.
Well, and also, I was out with Jerry Geyer last fall to the wreck, and it's quite a ways north of the, off Whitefish Bay, quite a ways north of the route to Grand Haven, so I'm suspecting he must have been steering into the wind then.
Well, he turned back. And the storm was such that he was being driven north. He was having a hard time maintaining his course because he was sinking slowly but surely. He was taking in water over the Seagate, and it was flooding the car deck. He did it the best that he could, and he ended up there because, you know, he couldn't keep steerage anymore and basically sank very slowly and tragically.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I thank you very much for your information for the new book.
All right.
Thanks a lot for calling. And you can join in, too, with a question at 1-800-642-1234. We have some open lines to get you on pretty quickly. Let's turn to Jim in Madison next. Jim, hello.
Hello, how are you? Thank you for getting me on.
Sure.
The reason I'm calling is that my great-great-grandfather immigrated from England in 1849 and I think came across to Wisconsin on the Erie Canal, I presume, then came through the Great Lakes on a ship, I believe ended up, I thought, Noshkosh. Was it possible to go up the Fox River and go the whole way?
Oh, definitely. There was a fair amount of shipbuilding in Oshkosh, actually. They had a system of channels there very early on, and very, very large vessels obviously couldn't navigate it, but the Great Lakes were a tremendous immigration route. The vessels came up the canal boats in the Erie Canal and then went from Buffalo and Erie generally to Detroit. Or sometimes Sault Ste. Marie, certainly if they're going to Lake Superior. And there are many records of immigration that are kept of people entering the country through the ports of Detroit and Sault Ste. Marie, if you're ever interested in finding that. Unfortunately, we don't have passenger lists on Great Lakes vessels. The reason being that they traveled a short distance, they stopped often, took people on often, and let people off often. And sure. So, you know, and they usually weren't entering a new country. They were all within the United States. So the value of a passenger list was limited. We don't really have that kind of information. Just immigration records of, people from other countries arriving at a port, usually.
All right.
How long did it take to get from New York to Wisconsin?
Well, from Buffalo to Wisconsin, it depended on how long ago you're talking, but in the 1840s, 1850s, on a steamer, it could take anywhere from 1 to 2 weeks. If you encountered bad weather, certainly longer. If you took a schooner, it could take substantially longer. In the modern era, it was a lot quicker. You could come up the lakes in usually 4 or 5 days on a modern steamship.
All right. Thanks, Jim. Thank you for calling. And Brian in Fond du Lac, hello to you.
Hey, thanks for the great show.
Thanks.
Hey, I was curious about something. Back in the heyday of the Manitowoc shipyards building craft for World War II, were there any World War II vintage ships that were lost on checkout voyages or testing voyages for equipment? Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting question. The Wisconsin Maritime Museum has a lot of information on the vessels built there, particularly the submarines. They have a wonderful collection, and they have a submarine, an honest-to-good mm-hmm. World War II sub, the Cobia, parked out front. I've gone through their records a bit on that, and none of the submarines were ever lost on checkout voyages. They used to have to take them up into northern Lake Michigan because that was the only place they could find sufficient depth of water to test them out. And fortunately, they were well-built, and every one of them survived the Great Lakes. However, a number of them were lost in action in World War II. Not too many vessels were lost on their maiden voyages. In particular, we're talking about steamships and schooners. Yeah. Although we did have one that was lost fairly early in her career on Manitowoc, the Cornelia B. Windiatt was actually the subject of a History Channel documentary. She vanished into thin air on northern Lake Michigan just a few months after being built, and she was found in 1986 in Lake Huron. Nobody could figure out how she got there because she was never seen going through the straits. The straits had iced in completely, and it remains something of a mystery how this ship jumped lakes.
Wow. any speculation? How would you...
Well, the visibility was pretty bad that year in the Straits. There was some blizzards still in April, and it was her first voyage of the season, I think. And I think it was maybe the fall. Hard to remember. But she iced up very slowly after passing through the Straits, we think, in a blizzard at night. And she slowly, slowly was pressed underwater by the weight of the ice. That's the conventional wisdom. She's in beautiful condition has been the subject of a survey by the Thunder Bay National Marine Sanctuary over in Alpena on Lake Michigan. They've done a beautiful, beautiful documentary on her.
Excellent. Well, John, do you have a quick question from Sturgeon Bay?
Yes, I do. Thank you for taking my call. You mentioned a little while ago a registry of all the ships that had sailed the Great Lakes. From the time the records have been kept, is there a similar compilation of a list of captains who had sailed on the lakes in the period?
Mm-hmm. I believe that there is, but it's not easy to distill. Mm-hmm. What I'm referring to essentially are the enrollment documents at the National Archives. Every vessel required a new enrollment document from a customs house on the Great Lakes anytime it was built, re-rigged, changed masters, changed owners, or changed dimensions. And those documents are all preserved. I would say about 80% of them actually are preserved, but their master abstracts, their large, enrollment books are preserved and contain all of them. They contain the name of the vessel, the name of the captain, and the name of the owner. We've done a lot of work to transcribe those. The Wisconsin Marine Historical Society has a database, which I put online for them. Mm-hmm. It is at WMHS.org, and it lists 44,000 vessels. It does not list the captain's names. You would have to go there in person to the Milwaukee Public Library and go through the microfilms and find the captain's name still. But the data does exist. Someday we'll digitize it.
And with that, we have to close. Brendan, thank you so much for being with us. I'm really enjoying your book, Wisconsin's Lost Ships. How do we get a copy?
This book can be ordered online from the Wisconsin Underwater Archaeology Association at www.wuaa.org.
WUAA.org.
That's right. This book is completely a benefit for them, and all proceeds go to help our work in surveying wrecks and telling their stories.
Thank you so much, Brendan.
Thank you so much, Larry.
Brendan Baylott is author of Wisconsin's Lost Ships, Interesting Stories. And thank him and thank you for listening, and stay with us. Lots in store.